far. You go quench. Me, I no be gentleman like that.
I no be gentleman at all.
I be African man, original.
I no be gentleman at all.
I be African man, original.
I no be gentleman at all.
I be African man, original.
I no be gentleman at all.
You dey go your way, the judge away. Somebody come bring original trouble. You no talk, you no act. You say you be gentleman. You go suffer, you go tire, you go quench. Me, I no be gentleman like that.
I no be gentleman at all.
I be African man, original. African man, original.
I no be gentleman at all.
Africa hot, I like her, I'm so. I know what to wear, but my friends don't know. He put in socks, he put in shoe, he put in pant, he put in singlet, he put in trouser, he put in shirt, he put in tie, he put in coat. He come cover all within heart. He be gentleman. He go sweat all over. He go faint right down. He go.
Uhuru, you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, Norman Otis Richmond, and I'm speaking to you from Toronto, Canada, and we have an excellent show for you today, excellent in our judgment, but you are ultimately the judge, and we're going to be doing an hour-long special on Calypso, Kaiso, and we're also going to be paying tribute to Wynton Kelly. Wynton Kelly, a great pianist who passed away in Toronto in 1972, and he was born 80 years ago, Friday, December the 2nd, in Brooklyn, New York. And his parents were from Trinidad and Jamaica, and he played with Miles Davis and John William Coltrane, as well as led bands on his own. And we're also going to be playing some great music in this first half an hour for you. And I'd like to begin the show like I begin the show every week, and I'd like to pay tribute to Archie Shepp and O'Malley Ishitella, two men from Florida. Chairman O'Malley Ishitella and Archie Shepp were born in Florida. They don't live there now. Archie doesn't live there now, but Chairman O'Malley definitely lives there now. But I'd like to thank them for giving me the concept and also giving me the space to do this show. And we have an email address. You can email us at dj@uhururadio.com. The Skype option is Uhuru Radio. And if you are in North America, you can phone 727-565-1599. And if you're in the United Kingdom, you can call 020-8133-6629. And we're going to continue, our journey. We're still in Brazil. Sarah Vaughan did the Shining Hour, and that was from one of her three albums that she did based on Brazilian music, and a couple of them she did in Brazil. But right now we're going to go to Brazil once again and listen to the former Minister of Culture, Gilberto Gil, and he's going to perform Robert Nesta Marley's No Woman, No Cry.
No woman, no cry. No woman, no cry. No woman, no cry. No woman, no cry. Bem que eu me lembro da gente sentada ali na grama do aterro, sob o sol, observando hipócritas disfarçados rodando ao redor, amigos presos sumindo assim pra nunca mais. Das recordações, retratos do mal em si, melhor é deixar pra trás. Cante comigo, não, não chore mais. Não, não chore mais. Yeah! Não, não chore mais. Menino, não chore assim. Não chore mais. Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember when we used to sit in the government yard in trash town, observing the hypocrites
Can bring this identity. People don't let
man no cry. No, no woman.
No, no man no cry.
I say, no woman no cry. No, no woman.
No woman.
You're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. And we just heard two renditions of No Woman, No Cry. We heard from the originator of that song, Robert Nestor Marley and the Wailers. That was recorded live. And we also heard from Gilberto Gil out of Brazil. He did a rendition of No Woman, No Cry in English and in Portuguese. And Gilberto Gil was once the Minister of Culture for Brazil under Lula. And he served in government, and he is no longer in government, but he's still a part of the movement and a very progressive musician. He came to Toronto one time. He came here. He was brought here by Lance Ingleton of Ingleton Productions, and Lance is no longer with us, but Lance brought us some very beautiful shows. And at 3:30, we're going to be paying tribute to Wynton Kelly, and at 2:30, we're going to be speaking to Clevel James of Limers. It's a group of people who deal with a lot of good music from Trinidad and Tobago and the Eastern Caribbean called Calypso. The current form is Soca, but we're going to be dealing with Calypso or Kaiso. And right now we wanted to slow it down, play a couple of slow jams, and come back with Clevel James. This is Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio.
You abandon me. Love don't live here anymore. Just a vacancy. Love don't live here anymore. Inside of me, there was nothing I could conceive that you wouldn't do for me. Trouble seemed so far away, you changed it right away, baby. You abandoned me, love don't live here anymore.
want another place to stay, another home. You've abandoned me. Love don't live here anymore. Just a vacancy. You have to go away. Don't you know I miss you so and need your love? You've abandoned me. Love don't live here anymore. Just a vacancy.
There's no one sitting there. But oh, a chair's not a house, and a house is not a home when there's no one there. So hold you tight and no one there that you can hear. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, hello, bye bye, baby. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. A room is still a room, even when there's nothing. But gloom, but oh, a room is not a house, and a house is not a home when the two of us, we are far apart, and one of us has a broken heart. Yeah, now and then, now I call your name, and suddenly your face appears, but it's just a crazy game, and when it ends, it pretty little darling, have a heart, yeah, baby,
And don't let one mistake keep us apart. I was wrong and I know it. Forgive me, honey, 'cause I'm not meant to live alone. No, 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 no. Time is hard to swallow when I climb the stairs. When I turn the key, oh, please be there, saying that you're still in love. You're sure in love with me. Reach out and turn the key, oh, baby, please be there and still in love. I said, still in please be still in love with me. Are you gonna be you're gonna be in love with me? It's driving me crazy to think that my baby wouldn't be my baby, wouldn't be my baby. You're gonna be still in love with me.
And you're listening to Uhuru Radio, and the show is Diasporic Music. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, and I'm speaking to you from Toronto here in the Great White North. And we have been listening to the music of Rolls Royce, Love Don't Live Here Anymore. Rolls Royce, the foundation group, came out of Washington High School in Los Angeles, California. That's the high school that I graduated from, but I didn't go there. It's a long story, another time. And we also heard from Luther Vandross. He did A House Is Not a Home in 1988 at the NAACP Image Awards. And A House Is Not a Home, that was a very, very beautiful rendition. And he brought the house down, as you heard. And joining me on the line from Toronto, Canada, is Clevo James. And Clevo James is a basically the moderator of a something called the Limas Forum. And the Limas Forum, we're going to talk about the Limas Forum, but Clevo is about the music of the Eastern Caribbean, primarily Trinidad and Tobago. I guess some people talk about Kaiso, Calypso, and most people know it today as it has gone into what is called soca. But I guess, Clevel, how are you doing?
Good, fine. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm wonderful. I guess we wanted to begin this interview just basically asking you the question of what is the Lyman's Forum?
Yes, the Lyman's Forum is a Yahoo online group started in 2000. So we are 11 years old. And it's a group of basically calypso lovers, calypso enthusiasts, people from all over the world who love this art form and who support it and who, you know, just think the music, the lyrics, the historical aspect of it is what, you know, what they like about this music. Now, in the Caribbean, limas, the word limas, limas were originally people who hung out on street corners and discussed everything from the latest sports score to the current parliamentary debate. The street corner was a place of lower and higher learning. It was a place for cultural exchange. Lyman has now evolved to mean any gathering for which the primary purpose is to have fun. This could be on a street corner, at the beach, in a backyard, or in a basement. So that is why the term Lymans, you know, applies here. We concentrate on calypso, but it's not only calypso. Members can post, they do post everything from entertainment, reviews, literature, philosophy, music, current events. And we have people from Canada, Trinidad and Tobago, Barbados, the U.S., U.K., Germany, Switzerland, all over the world. And these people, the demographics is very wide. We have performers, writers, educators, intellectuals, researchers, administrators, enthusiasts, anyone who loves this art form and just loves talking about it and learning new things about it, which I do. Although I moderate, I learn so much from the knowledgeable members of this group. And that's what the Lyman's is all about. We have 236 members. Now, that's not a lot with these, in this deal, Facebook, where people have, you know, thousands of members, but thousands of friends. But these members are diehard, dedicated people to this calypso art form.
Let me ask you this question. Do you have any idea of demographic in terms of the age factor? Because when I go to concerts, say, if you go to hear someone like Wynton Marsalis, who is no longer a... I met Wynton and heard him the first time when he was in his 20s.
Okay.
But if you go to hear someone like Wynton Marsalis, or if you go hear a B.B. King, it is an older crowd, and there are not that many people of African origin. Is this the same thing, same situation in terms of, is the Lyman's Forum primarily older people? Because I know when you go to calypso concerts, the Caribbean people, unlike other African forms of music, calypso, the originators of the music seem to have really be loyal to the music, as opposed to when I say it hasn't crossed over like say reggae, so on and so forth, but so you still have a lot of African people that listen to calypso in concerts.
In concerts, yes. Now, the demographics of the Lymans, people of all ages, maybe a little older, maybe, you know, 50-plus, all races, you know, and because the parts of the world and the most prolific researchers in this calypso art form are not people of African descent. It's strange, you know, this is a fact. There are people who have the ability, they have the resources to do the research in calypso, and a lot of them are maybe people, you know, North American, white folks, Indian, East Indian of the Caribbean or outside the Caribbean. Actually, there used to be a website, I don't see it anymore, but it's called the Calypso Tent, and this was this was someone not of Caribbean descent, but someone from Nigeria who ran this site. So mm-hmm. we have one of the most prolific researchers today is someone called Ray Funk, and he is a white American who lives in Alaska.
He lives in Alaska, right.
That's you know, contradictory to what you think a lover of calypso should be, someone
right.
from the Caribbean. But he just got into this music and fell in love with it, and does a extensive research and presentations on the calypso art form.
You're listening to... No, I'm sorry for cutting you off. Go ahead.
Yeah, the as far as calypso itself is concerned, yes, it is an older crowd because the younger folks tend to concentrate more on the soca, which is a child of calypso.
Right.
But I find it, you know, with calypso, I find as people mature, they switch. They sort of grow into calypso,
right,
which is very lyrical and topical, and it's a more serious music. And when people get older and they're not dancing as much, they tend to listen to calypso music and the social commentary, political commentary that it offers.
All right, you're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali. I'm speaking with Clevel James, who is the man who started the Limers Forum. And we're going to be listening to some music shortly, but we are basically trying to get some sort of idea about calypso music. And I think calypso music has been really neglected, so we really wanted to give the Kaisonians their time to shine. Could you talk about how did calypso get started?
Oh, yes. The origins of calypso. Calypso was started... Now, of course, calypso, the root of calypso is in Africa, West Africa. The actual calypso, as we know it now, started on the sugar plantations in the Caribbean. It is, you know, just like the American or North America, the United States music that came out of slavery, you know, songs like Steal Away and... Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, and stuff like that, that people sung with double meanings, double entendre, to give certain messages. That's how calypso started, and that's how it was used in those days, similarly. Now, there was it is said that the first calypsonian was a calypsonian named Grosjean, which is French for Big John, right? That's what it is. French for Big John.
Okay,
Big,
right.
Big John, yeah. Grosjean. Now, that was in Trinidad. But however, he came out of Martinique.
It's French, which was colonized by the French, right?
It's correct. It's colonized by the French. Now, Trinidad was a place where there was ruled by the Spanish in the 18th century, and there weren't enough. There wasn't enough labor there. So what they did, the Spanish declared what they call a cedula of population, where they encouraged Catholic planters to come to Trinidad, that's sugar cane planters, owners, to come to Trinidad with their slaves, and they would be given land and opportunity, and they would be welcomed as long as they're Catholic. Now, what happened is a lot of French came. Although the country is ruled by Spanish, it was probably dominated by the French culture. And they came from places like Martinique, Grenada, you know, Guadeloupe, these places, and they settled in Trinidad. And one of these slave masters was a guy called Pierre Bergerat, they said. And in 1784, he came there with Grosjean. And Grosjean was one of the first recorded history, Grosjean was is supposedly the first calypsonians. Now, there are a lot of other, you know, stories on calypsonians and how the word came about and how it was started. But we think that this word calypso, you know, that describes this, is really a household word. I mean, in carito or kaito. And that word was... a word that could be translated today as bravo or encore. But the word literally means go on, right? Kaito, go on. And you know, in the 70s, 60s and 70s, in the American music, there was the phrase, go on with your bad self. You remember that phrase?
Yes, sir. Right.
I think it's a similar thing. Someone's doing something good, they say, go on with your bad self. So in the calypso arena, when a calypso is really good, especially when it's a stinging one, or maybe the government or some official, people would shout "Kaiso, Kaiso," meaning
right.
It is a great song, you know. Bravo, go on with your bad self. That's what the Kaiso term means.
Now, Hausa is a spoken in West Africa. It's Nigeria, but Nigeria. Other parts of West. Right.
Yes, mostly in northern Nigeria, and right. That is, you know, that is where they think the term Kaito right. came from.
I cut you off. I want to clarify that. How's the word?
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah, so this is how this calypso began. And in the early days, calypso used to be sung in French. It's only in the turn of the 20th century, basically, calypso really got, like English became prominent in calypso. And these, that's why in the early days of calypso, in the English calypso, you would find the calypsonians use a lot of elaborate words, big words, as you say. And they wanted to show off and show their prowess in this new language that they have, the English language. And the calypsonian who could use the biggest English word, he was called Mate de Kaiso, Master of Calypso, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in a lot of the earlier calypsonians would use a lot of huge words to describe. But very beautiful.
Bombastic sesquipedalian etymology.
That's right, things like that.
Right.
Whether they make proper English sense or not, right? But
right.
It was fun listening to, and you got the meaning of what they were talking about. You know?
Mm-hmm. So I think we have an example of some of this music that we're going to play, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yeah, what I wanted, the first calypso, calypso was recorded before jazz or the blues were recorded in the U.S., right?
After we play the song, I'd like to talk about that, yeah.
Okay.
Keep on going.
Yeah, this song is called L'année passée. No, sorry. This song is called Mango Vert. And this was the first calypso recorded, and it was recorded in 1912. It's a song done by a band called Lovey's Band, and it's called Mango Vert.
You're listening to Uhuru Radio, and this is Dire Sport Music, and on the line from Toronto is Clevel James. My name is Norman Richmond. We are here. Both of us are in Toronto, and we have just heard a sample of the first calypso music that was recorded in 1912. Yeah, could you elaborate on that?
Yes. The calypso was recorded in 1912. Mango ver, which is a type of mango, also called long mango in Trinidad, but the ver is that the French part of it, right? That's where we were still into the French mode of calypso at that time. Now, the band that recorded was a band called Lovey's Band, and the band did a recording session in New York City in 1912, and the recording was 5 years before the first jazz recording. And the first jazz recording, I think, is listed as a recording by the original Dixie Jazz Band in 1917, that recording was. And it was called Livery Stables Blues. And at that time, jazz used to be spelled J-A-S-S, right? Not
jazz,
J-A-Z-Z or Z-Z, J-A-S-S, jazz. And as Wynton Marsalis said in the history of jazz, the people used to remove the J, and so J-A-S-S, they used to whitewash, put a line across the J, so that wasn't very nice, so I think that's why they changed it to J-A-Z-Z. But I'm not here to talk about jazz, I'm going to talk about calypso, right? So,
but I wanted to say one thing about that in terms of Amiri Baraka put forth the idea, which I guess new information is out there, that the Caribbean people were able to record first, and then Baraka maintained that they allowed black women to record first, but that's not true. That's not. They allowed black women to record, then the men didn't record until later, but that's not true because in 1917, you had this band recording, but it's still true that they did allow people from the Caribbean to record before they left the Negroes in America do their thing, right?
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. Yes.
Right.
That is, you know, it's strange as it seems because the recordings were right there in the United States.
Right,
but,
right.
That is absolutely correct.
That's part of, but that's part of the game that the slavers of African people played, you know, to pit one group against the other, in my judgment. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I guess we wanted to talk about who were some of the earlier calypso artists.
Yes. There were early calypso artists at the turn of the century, from the 19th to the 20th century, when this, that's when, I guess, calypsonians were really gaining a lot of fame. Some of the early people were called chanteuses, and they were people who would sing with the carnival bands. A lot of them were women at the time. And they were always associated with a carnival band. But then,
so it didn't start off as a male like hip hop, or I'm definitely not trying to put hip hop down, but a lot of forms of music, the women were secondary.
Yes,
but so you're saying in calypso the women were.
Yes, but
in the beginning, okay.
Yes, but as you just what you're saying there, somehow it changed as the calypso developed. And the women became secondary, or there was a lot of, you know, calypsos, sort of anti-woman calypsos, as you would say. Some would say the women were put down a lot in calypso throughout history. But we would get to, you know,
later.
Women became so prominent and even won the calypso crown. That was Calypso Rose, which we will get to, right?
Right.
But, yeah, some of the early bars, there was a guy named Railway Douglas, Walter Douglas, also called Chieftain Douglas, and it's said that he started the first calypso tent in 1921.
Well, this is a historical thing, right? 21, that's, 90 years ago.
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm. What a calypso tent where calypsos were performed, right? It was called a tent because he definitely took some tarpaulin and made this tent, right? And people used to go there and sing their calypsos. And even today, if calypsos have been sung in a theater or a concert hall, it's called a tent. So you'll always hear a calypso tent. It started off as a literal tent, but today it's not a tent anymore. They sing in all different venues, but they're still called calypso tent.
Really, I don't want to cut you, but we have a calypso tent at the Steelworkers Hall here in Toronto. That's a tent.
Correct. Yes, and it's not a tent. Yeah.
Right.
Yes. Yes. And I think they call it calypso forum. Right? Is that
right?
Yes. So yes, this started off in this calypso tent with Railway Douglas, and then we had some other guys. One is a Lord Executor. You realize that the name, there was also a King Radio. He's the one who gave us that Matilda calypso. You must know that, the Matilda. Yes.
Take the money, run to Venezuela.
Give
it to Chavez, right, okay.
So that is it's Harry Belafonte took and made very popular. We'll get to Harry right in a minute, but so in the early days they took all these names and bravado names, you know, like the Growling Tiger and the Roaring Lion and things like that. And we have some samples of earlier calypsos. Right now, I think if you we can listen to. Calypso playlist number 2, and it's called The Gold in Africa. But before you start playing it, it's this Growling Tiger singing about the Italian Prime Minister Benito Mussolini's invasion of Abyssinia in 1936.
Right.
In
mm-hmm.
1936, and he's saying, why does Mussolini want to invade? He's answering the question, why he thinks Mussolini wants to invade Abyssinia. And he said, there's a gold in Africa. And the song was written in 1938, and after he's wondering if it's really the gold, he said he doesn't know why. He said maybe it's Mussolini wants Haile Selassie's wife. You know, these are the ways these guys.
Right.
And one thing I want to say is that Tiger was known as the master of Mi minor. me, you know, me, these guys, lots of them didn't know music. So the scale, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, like, if they're playing a key of C, they wouldn't say C, D, E, they wouldn't say E, they would say mi, you know what I mean?
Instead
of saying,
right.
E minor, you know, so they say mi minor, and he was known as the master of mi minor because the calypsos were sung in the early days in the minor scale, which haunting, which is like blues also, right? That haunting, you know, deeply spiritual scale that you know, that's sad, it's sad, it saddens everything when something's played in the minor scale. So if you can play number two, playlist number two, this is Growling Tiger playing The Gold in Africa.
Africa, Mussolini won from the emperor. Abbasinia appealed to the League for Peace. Mussolini actions were like a beast, a villain, a thief, a highway robber, and a shameless dog for a dictator. Crossed the border and had it more. The emperor had no intentions for war. That man I call a criminal. The man destroyed churches and hospitals. He said expansion he really needed. He had 45 million heads to feed. Why he don't attack the Japanese? England, France, or hang on Germany?
You're listening to Uhuru Radio. This is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali. I am on the line with Clevo James of the Limers Forum. And we just heard from the Roaring Lion and singing about Africa. And you have something on here about the Roaring Lion, the Growling. We just heard that was a growling tiger. And I'm getting mixed up the Roaring Lion because the Roaring Lion, I met him personally, Papa Chunks. And
that's it,
Papa Chunks, right?
Yes.
And he claimed that Calypso began in France. I know had nothing to do with Africa, but that, could you talk about that?
Yes, he claimed that. He even wrote a book on that. And, you know, there's a lot of opinions on where Calypso began. Now, most people, the consensus is that it came from Africa. There is another argument, a sub-argument within that, not where Calypso came from, but where the word Calypso came from. And mm-hmm. I think that's where a lion or a lion could have been confused. And to say that it's from France, but, you know, everybody's entitled to his opinion. Now, my old principal from Phonetics College in Trinidad, Dom Basil Matthews, who was a sociologist and historian and, you know, a priest, he wrote on Calypso, and he believed the word Calypso came from a French word, Caruso.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the Hausa word Kaito or Karito. So people have these beliefs. You know, Don Basil knew that a calypso came from Africa, really. He had, you know, there's no qualms about it that he thought it came from France. But Roaring Lion, who was a prolific calypsonian, he sung a whole, many, many hundreds of calypsos. He's one of the first pioneers, went to England, and there is a TV series called Love Thy Neighbor, and he has this popular calypso called that, Love Thy Neighbor, and he's one of the, you know, he lived to be in his 80s or maybe close to 90 and performed until he died. And he came here to Toronto and performed. I think that's when you interviewed him. Right.
Yeah, it was maybe 1994. It was the same, he performed the same day that Al Hamilton, who people in Toronto know was the publisher and editor of Contrast newspaper.
Okay, all right. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask you, which calypso do you think had the greatest influence on the world? But I guess you want to finish your thought first.
No, that is fine. That's that's what I had to say on the Royal Line. I must, I respect him. He's a great calypsonian, of course. And that is one, I think a lot of calypso enthusiasts disagree with Lyon on that, the origin of calypso coming from France. But on the other hand, he was a great man, a great calypsonian. Calypso, the influence in the world, yes. There were a few times when they call the calypso eras in North America or in the world, the golden age of calypso, they're usually called. And one was in the 1930s when guys like a guy named Attila the Hun and the Lord Beginner and the Growling Tiger, who we just heard from, they went to the U.S. and did some recordings in 1937, 38. And that was one of the golden years of calypso. Then the most popular calypso that came out of that was around 1943, when the Lord Invader recorded a calypso called Rum and Coca-Cola. And that calypso sort of turned the world upside down, as Lord Invader said, because Murray Amsterdam, you know that name? That guy used to be in the earlier,
yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Carol Burnett shows. What's her name?
Dick Van Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke shows, that's correct, yeah.
Right.
And he came and he heard that song and went to the U.S. and gave it to the Andrew Sisters.
Right. That would be like giving it to Lady Gaga today, right?
That's correct, yeah. And they sung that song, recorded it, and they a big hit. The song became a big hit. They made a lot of money on the song, and eventually there was a lawsuit. The Lord Invader sued them for copyright infringement. And let's see. In 1945, that became a great hit. So it took a couple of years for them to do it, and it spent 10 weeks at the top of the Billboard charts in the U.S. Pop.
That was not R&B number one. We were talking about pop.
Yes,
the pop charts. Yeah.
Correct. The pop charts.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And this song, we play it right, this song. Let's say the Lord Invader got a hefty, some say $250,000, and nobody knows for sure, I guess, a hefty settlement for this song, because it was settled eventually. The song was published in the United States with Amsterdam, listing the lyricist as the son Jerry Sullivan and Paul Barron. And it's totally amazing. They came up with all these things for this song that was this man's song. But the song was also, Lord Invader was not the true originator of the song. That's the strange part of all this. He put some lyrics and added a verse to a chorus that was maybe a traditional song, which was recorded by a musician called Lionel Belasco.
Mm-hmm.
And the song was named L'année passée, which is last year in English, that's French. And it was really based on a song from Martinique. The original lyrics to Rum and Coca-Cola were written by Lord Invader, right, the Rupert Grant. And he went by the stadium with Lord Invader. Rupert Grant was his name. That's where the credits, the lyrics went to. And he won the plagiarism suit via his attorney, Louis Nazaire. And it can be read in Louis Nazaire's book, My Life in Court. Now, according to Lord Invader, he says about calypso, we're going to play the song soon, but he says that calypso is the folklore of Trinidad, a style of poetry telling about current events in song. He said back home in the West Indies, that's what he gave in his, what he talked about in court when he went there. Trinidad, where I'm from, is a small island. I'm proud of it. I was traveling on a bus someplace they called Point Kumana, a bathing resort. And I happened to see the GIs in the American social invasion of the West Indies. You know, during World War II, the Americans were in Trinidad on a base. They were their soldiers protecting, I guess, the oil. That's what they said, the oil in Trinidad.
Right.
So there were a lot of GIs, a lot of Americans in Trinidad, and they it was a whole social upheaval about the American GIs coming, taking away the girls, but they had a lot of, you know, they came with their money. And so there was a whole subculture of prostitution and stuff, things like that happening because of the American GIs in Trinidad. And that's what this song is all about, this rum and Coca-Cola. And Invader went on to say that, you know, the girls used to get the candies and stuff like that, and they got to the canteen and the boys and so on, you know, candies, you know what he means, have fun. So I noticed since the GIs came over there, they really generally chase with soda, meaning that they use Coke as a chaser for their drinks, right?
Right, ordinary, right.
But the you know, the Trinidad didn't chase with soda, but the GIs use rum, they chase it with Coke, rum and Coke.
Right.
So they drink rum and they like Coca-Cola as a chaser, he said. So I study that as an idea of a song. And Maury Amsterdam had the nerve to say that he composed that song back here. Now, Belasco and Invader sued for copyright infringement of the song and the music and lyrics in 1948. After years of litigation, both plaintiffs won their case, with Lord Invader receiving $150,000 in royalties. However, Maury Amsterdam was allowed to retain copyright to the song. So we can listen to this.
Are we going to listen to 3 and 4 or just listen
to 3? We can listen to 3 and 4. 3 is the Lord Invader's version of Rum and Coca-Cola, and 4 is the Andrew Sisters version of Rum and Coca-Cola.
No, I think we should do them back to back, please.
Yes, okay.
When the Yankees first went to Trinidad, some of the young girls were more than glad. They said that the Yankees treat them nice, and they give them a better price. They buy rum and Coca-Cola, went down Point Fumana, both mothers and daughters, working for their Yankee dollars. I had a little chick the other day, but her mother came and took her away. Herself, her mother, and her sisters went in a cab with some soldiers. They bought rum and Coca-Cola, went down Point Fumana, both mothers and daughters, working for their Yankee dollars. They have some aristos in Port of Spain. I know a lot, but I won't call name. And in the day, they wouldn't give you a right, but you could see them with the foreigners late at night, drinking rum and Coca-Cola, going down Point Fumana, both mothers and daughters, working for their Yankee dollars. I know a couple who got married one afternoon. I was to go to Miami on their honeymoon, but the bride ran away with a soldier lad, and the stupid husband went staring mad. They bought rum and Coca-Cola, going down Point Fumana, both mothers and daughters, working for their Yankee dollars.
If you ever go down Trinidad, they make you feel so very glad. Calypso sing and make up rhyme, guarantee you one real good fine time. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter working for the Yankee dollar. Oh, beat it, man, beat it. If a Yankee comes to Trinidad, they got the young girls all going mad. Young girls say they treat them nice, make Trinidad like paradise. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter working for the Yankee dollar.
Oh, you vex me, you vex me. Chicka chick carry to Mona's Isle. Native girls all dance and smile. Helps Ocha celebrate his leave. Makes every day like New Year's Eve. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola. Go down Point Cumana.
You're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Richmond. I'm on the line with Clevel James, who is the administrator, the man behind the Limers Forum. And before we go any further, for people that are not on the Limers Forum that would like to join Limers listening to this show, I hope you can pick up some more listeners. But how can people become a part of the conversation?
Yes. To join Limers, the simplest way is to Google the word Limers. The first return you will get is the Limers Forum. So you can click on it and just request that you want to join. And I will get an email and I will join you up. We have to keep it that way where it's controlled, just to avoid all the other, you know, internet traffic and people,
right?
Unscrupulous people coming on.
Right. So we have about 20 minutes left, and if we run out of time, we'll do it part two next week. But, the African people, African Americans, began to look at Calypso, Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald. And Louis Armstrong, could you talk about, and we'll listen to some of their music, but could you talk about their contribution?
Yeah, it's amazing. Louis Armstrong, of course, we know is one of the greatest jazz musicians. He came out of New Orleans and traveled to Chicago and then, was world famous. He tried or delved into Calypso also. Yeah, he did a version of Peanut Vendor. Also, the great Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Jordan, they did the song Stone Cold Dead in the Market, which is a song about a real incident that happened in Barbados in the 40s where this woman killed her husband. And so we would like to listen to first the Louis Armstrong singing Peanut Vendor. This was 1930. And Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Jordan doing Stone Cold Dead in the Market, which was in 1946.
All right, let's go to Louis Satchmo, Louis Armstrong, right next to it. Thank you.
Ba-ba-ba-be didn't button that they know. What a bad it alone, what they know. That's when I love for you, my dear. That's when I pay for you, Marie. But it is not this button, button, all. But it is button, 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 all. But it is button, button, all, my dear. That's when I know my Cuban is in the door. When Spanish all may be, then my Spanish, my world is hot, my reed. Oh, Spanish, 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 Spanish.
Dead in the market, he's stone cold dead in the market, he's stone cold dead in the market. I killed nobody but my husband.
Last night I went out drinking. When I came home I gave her a beating. So she caught up the rolling pin and went to work on my head till she washed it in. I like old dead in the market, stone cold dead in the market. I like old dead in the market. She killed nobody but her husband.
I lick him with the pot and the frying pan. I lick him with the pot and the frying pan. I lick him with the pot and the frying pan. And if I kill him, he had it coming. Man, he's stone cold dead in the market. He's stone cold dead in the market. He's stone cold dead in the market. I killed nobody but my husband.
My family, they swearing to kill her. My family, they swearing to kill her.
His family, they swearing to kill me. And if I kill him, he had it coming.
Yeah, like old dead in the market, child. Cold dead in the market, child. I like old dead in the market. She killed nobody but her husband.
There's one thing that I am sure. He ain't going to beat me no more. So I tell you that I doesn't care if I was to die in the electric chair. Man, he's stone cold dead in the market. Stone cold dead in the market. He's stone cold dead in the market. I killed nobody but my husband.
Hey, child, I'm coming back and bash you on your head one more time.
No, no, man, you can't do that. You stone cold dead in the market, murder. Stone cold dead in the market. The criminal is stone cold dead in the market. I kill nobody but my husband.
You're listening to Uhuru Radio, and this is Dire Spork Music on Uhuru Radio. My special guest from Toronto is Clevel James of the Limers Forum. My name is Norman Richmond. And we were listening to Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Jordan. Before that, we heard Peanut Vendor by Louis Armstrong, Satchmo. But the story that I had to tell was that Oscar Peterson, whose parents were born in St. Kitts and one was born in the Virgin Islands, he toured with Ella Fitzgerald and Wynton Kelly. And he said that we're going to feature Wynton Kelly in the last half an hour of the show, that Ella would be on the, they would be on the bus, and Wynton and he would be speaking patois. Ella could not contain herself with laughter. You know, she would be listening to
And I guess she would probably be laughing because, you know, everybody thought that Oscar Peterson was from Chicago or Cleveland someplace, you know. But he was from Montreal, and his parents were from the Caribbean, and he could speak patois quite well. And I'm on the line with Clevel James. So could you give us a little rundown on that?
Oscar speaking patois?
No, forget about that.
I know not that, but in Oscar's piano playing, there was a lot of patois in there, you know, you could hear it. So I know.
Oscar used to play for Marcus Garvey when Marcus Garvey came to Montreal, but we're running out of time. We basically want to talk about how Harry Belafonte fits into the art form of calypso.
Yes. So after the first two golden ages, and you know, people were familiar, especially with that calypso or rum and Coca-Cola, Harry Belafonte got into. He was, an actor. We tried all that, and he was singing folk music. And he decided, he was of Jamaican parents. He decided to
Jamaican and his father was from Martinique.
Martinique, yeah, that's right, and Jamaica, yes.
Right.
So he spent a lot of his time in Jamaica. So he thought, you know, he would use his Jamaican roots to his advantage. And he started, because in Jamaica they also sung calypso, which they call mento, right? But it's really the same. It's calypso. That was before reggae and rocksteady and ska and all these music were born. So Belafonte started singing his folk music, and fortunately at that time there was a guy named Irvin Burgee, who was of Caribbean. He was born in New York, but he is of Caribbean heritage also. He was born in Brooklyn. His mother was from Barbados, and his father was from the Virgin Islands. No, from Virginia, sorry. His mother was from Barbados. So he had his calypso roots. He used to hear his mother singing these songs. And he and Harry got together. Irvin traveled throughout the Caribbean listening to this music that the people were singing. In Jamaica, he heard these workers singing these banana songs while they were harvesting. So he wrote this banana boat song, which Harry, you know, took Day O, the name of the song. Harry took the number one. Irvin also
legendary.
Pardon?
I say legendary. They played at the Yankee baseball game. Day O, you hear it every time you listen to a Yankee or go to a Yankee baseball game. Yeah.
Yes. Irvin also wrote the Yellow Bird, which is from a Haitian song, you know, called Couchon, he said. So he wrote a lot of these songs. He didn't really write them. He sort of, as Harry Belafonte would say, he collected these music, right? So he changed them into some form. And that's how, so in 1956, he came together. There were 11 songs on Harry Belafonte's album called Calypso, and 8 of the 11 were written by Irvin Burgee, Lord Burgess, including the hit song Day O, which is really a Jamaican folk song, and I do have a copy of that Jamaican version of the folk song. And the song
did
that
Miss Lou do
on...
that? Did Lou, Miss Lou,
Lou
do the first version? Did she do the first
version? No.
Miss Lou?
No, that preceded Miss Lou. The first version preceded Miss Lou, yeah. Those were folk songs, right? Those were traditional songs. Miss Lou, of course, sung it in her repertoire, but she's not the originator.
That was before her. Okay, I'm clear.
Yes, correct, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's how Harry Belafonte got together with Irvin Burgee. And this album, called Calypso, was the first million-selling album of any type of music in the world. And it's ironic that it is, here we go again, you know, the Calypso was recorded before jazz and blues in the U.S. and also in the world. An album on Calypso music was the first to ever sell a million copies. And this was in 1956. The same year...
And I also... Go ahead. No, you finish.
Now, I was saying that the same year that we have one of the greatest Calypsonians who ever lived and still alive... 1956, and that goes into Mighty Sparrow. But I let Norman continue if you want on Harry Belafonte.
Well, I have heard Smokey Robinson speak on a number of occasions, and he says that it was Harry Belafonte that influenced the Motown sound. He definitely says that, you know, everybody was trying to, I don't know whether or not because they liked the art form or because they wanted to sell millions of records, but I know Smokey Robinson has gone on record many times to big up, as they say, Harry Belafonte. But in 1956, I guess everybody was listening to Calypso, and people don't realize that.
Correct, yes.
If you listen to, there was a, and I'm getting ready to go into some obscure names. There was a guy by the name of Ty Hunter. He sang with the Originals, and he sang with, he was out of Detroit. He did a song called Lonely Baby. I was used to, because I had a natural first tenor, but he used to do a lot of calypso-sounding things. Lonely Baby was a song he sang. But I could hear, growing up, I can remember listening to music. I didn't know at the time, but it was definitely influenced by calypso.
Okay, all right. And you know, this calypso blues song has been done by Nat King Cole. Nat King Cole also did Mama Look a Boo Boo with a duet with Harry Belafonte. And Marvin Gaye also did the calypso blues song, you know. So
he did that on his first some of his first recordings. Correct, right, right,
yes, correct. Yeah, yeah. So this Belafonte came up and brought calypso, whether we like it or not. Belafonte took calypso to the world because of Harry Belafonte, who was not of the calypso. You know, up to today, I believe that's what he has never visited Trinidad. Some of the, you know, the calypso purists would not recognize him, especially when he was listed as Calypso King of the World. But I don't think he did that. I think it's the
marketing did that, people. The media.
Yes, right. Yes, right. They did that. So he always, you know, says that he gives, you know, all the kudos to the Calypsonians out of the Caribbean, especially people like Lord Melody, who he did a lot of Melody's calypsos, right? Mama Look a Boo Boo, Shame and Scandal in the Family. These songs made Harry made them popular, and they made Harry famous. And a lot of these songs were written by Lord Melody, who could, you know, they say go away for 2 weeks and come back with 20 songs, you know. he was very talented. So now this, but Harry's first album, this Calypso, called Calypso, aptly called Calypso, was most of the songs were written by Irvin Burgee. And Irvin Burgee, by the way, is the he wrote the lyrics to the National Anthem of Barbados. So this guy, you know, has accomplished a lot. He's still there in New York. If you go to the Sunshine Awards in New York every year at the end of October, you'll see Irvin Burgee there, very humble. He talks to everyone, anyone who wants to talk to him.
How did he fare economically? Was he ever compensated? I met Ms. Lou. Well, Miss Lou lived here in Toronto.
Yes, correct.
And she spoke very highly of Belafonte. She basically said that she wanted to, and Harry Belafonte spoke highly of her. Harry Belafonte had tried to get her to sue him so she could get some money for the other guy, Burgess, because he was basically saying that he never took credit for composing the songs, and he really wanted to give her props. And I don't really know what happened, but I know that when I spoke to Miss Lou, she basically had no animosity towards Harry Belafonte.
Right. I am not sure of the relationship between Belafonte and Irvin Burgee. Irvin Burgee seems to be, you know, doing okay. I'm not sure. I know he's involved active in the music, and he was given a Sunshine Award a few years ago and honored there. I'm not sure exactly what his relationship with Harry is today, but I know, as you talk about Miss Lou, Lord Melody says that he has no animosity towards Harry Belafonte. He said that he came to the U.S. and he met Belafonte because Belafonte was doing his songs. And Melodies, quote unquote, he said, after I met him, we were married, meaning that they were such good buddies. And Belafonte right. said he admired Melodies so much because of, you know, this Calypso character. You know, Calypsonian is a sort of flamboyant kind of guy. They're true, you know, these Calypsonians those days. And Belafonte totally enjoyed Melody, and so did Melody and Belafonte. So Melody says he has no animosity with Belafonte, and he recognized that Belafonte is the guy who took the music to the world stage. And because of Belafonte, to a great degree, Calypso is popular today. There are a lot of young Calypsonians, they would tell you, I want to take this thing worldwide, you know. And he'd say, you know, they want to get it recognized, and little do they know. If they just do a little history, a little research, they realize that Calypso has been worldwide many times in the world.
For a long time. We only have 2 minutes left, and I wanted to invite you back next week. Maybe if we do the show next week, and it looks like I would like to do it next week, so we wanted to finish. We'll start next time with the Mighty Sparrow. Is there anything else you would like to add?
And I want to say thanks for the opportunity to allow me to talk about Calypso. The Calypso art form needs more exposure. It's been tops in the world a few times, but now it's kind of not there. It's kind of, you know, it's lower down in the totem pole with the soca and all these hip-hop and music like that, you know, with the young people. Calypso is a great music, and it's the lyrics are very pertinent, always, to what is happening in society. Now, I just want to say that, I hope everyone enjoys the week, and we can go, you know, fade out with Mighty Sparrow doing Gene and Dinah.
All right, so thank you very much for being on Uhuru Radio, and we will bring you back the next time we do a show, hopefully next week.
Okay.
And let us listen to the Mighty Sparrow's Gene and Dinah. Take care of yourself.
Okay, you too, Otis.
All right.
And just continue to listen to me, but never listen to this song, and eventually called me and gave me $2. A fellow named Jean Anthony. He never heard the song or anything. He just got tired of me bothering him. And so that's the story. And after that, coincidentally, the Yankees had to leave the base. And it wasn't very difficult to use the same characters, because you see, the characters in the commercial were supposed to be the same. Jean and Dinah, Rosita and Clementina came to me one morning after they complete their shopping, and they told me, honey, I never had more luxury, more than when I stopped and went into Salvatore to shop. You know, but I thought that was nice, but it didn't happen. And I love the characters, Gina and Dinah, Rosita and Clementine.
From the corner posing, bet your life is something they're selling. And if you catch them broken, you can get them all for nothing. Don't make a run, the Yankees gonna Sparrow take over now.
No more young.
Yankees in Trinidad. They go close down the base for wood. Them girls have to make out how they could. Brother is now they pack up in town. In for a penny and in for a pound. Believe me, it's competition. So traveling the town with the price drop low. So when you bounce up, Gina, Dinah, Rosita, why are you gonna call them posing? That's your life, something they're selling. If you catch them broke, you can get them.
The Yankees gonna Sparrow take over. Ah, Gina, Dinah, Rosita, Clementina.
You're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. This is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richardson, speaking to you from the Great White North here in Toronto, Canada. And we have just did an hour special on the music from the Eastern Caribbean, Calypso, from the Caribbean music, and we will follow that up next week. But right now we wanted to pay tribute to Wynton Kelly. Now, Wynton Kelly would have been 80 years old Friday, December the 2nd. And I wanted to say that Wynton Kelly was an A-list musician. Wynton Marsalis is named after Wynton Kelly. And he was known primarily as a pianist, but he also played saxophone and bass. He was born in New York City on December 2nd, 1931, and he passed away in Toronto, Canada on April 12th, 1971. He had an epileptic seizure, and he passed away. Also, he could only hear in one ear. He was a in special services with Spock, the guy from Star Trek. They were in special services in Arkansas together. And Jimmy Cobb, who's going to play on the next song we're going to play, remembers, you know, sitting in a hotel room with Wynton. They were playing, they played together with Dinah Washington, I guess, at the time. And Wynton saw Leo Nemor, I think his name is, Dr. Spock, not Dr. Spock, but Spock. And he said, that's Leo, and remembered that they were in special services together. And Wynton's father was born in Jamaica, and his mother was born in Trinidad. And I think his mother passed away at birth, and he was raised by the Trinidadian side of the family. And the Trinidadian side of the family, some of the members are Foxy Brown, the rapper, and Marcus Miller, who went along to play with Miles Davis. And most of people listening to this show would know Wynton Kelly from, he played on the Kind of Blue CD, which is the greatest or biggest selling jazz album in the history of the world. He played on one tune called Freddie Freeloader, and he also played on Naima. I think that's on the Giant Steps album. Naima is a song written by John Coltrane for his first wife, Naima. And this features John William Coltrane on saxophone. Wynton Kelly, of course, is playing piano. Jimmy Cobb is the drummer. And Paul Chambers is on bass. And Jimmy Cobb is still in the land of the living, so we wanted to play Naima by John Coltrane featuring Wynton Kelly.
Thank you.
You're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond. Can't even remember my own name. Speaking to you from Toronto, Canada, and we were listening to a very beautiful selection from John William Coltrane featuring the piano work of Wynton Kelly on piano. On bass is the late Paul Chambers, and still in the land of the living is Jimmy Cobb, still going strong. And Wynton Kelly recorded Strong Man, which was a song that was written for her, especially by Oscar Brown Jr. Oscar Brown Jr. Is the son of Oscar Brown Sr., who was a nationalist who wanted to start a 49th state movement. He wanted to create an independent nation for black people in the United States. And Oscar Brown Jr. at one time was a member of the Communist Party USA, and they kicked Oscar Brown Jr. out of the Communist Party for what was referred to as Negro nationalism. But Oscar Brown Jr. passed away a couple of years ago, very important person in African music, influenced Richard Pryor, believe it or not, and I guess people should know that he did the song called 40 Acres and a Mule. He was a longtime advocate of reparations, but this is a song that was written, he wrote for Abby Lincoln, called Strong Man, and Wynton Kelly and Max Roach and Sonny Rollins are playing on Strong Man. This is Strong Man featuring the piano work of Wynton Kelly and the vocals of Aminata Museka, a.k.a. Abby Lincoln.
Me, he's wild about me. I'm in love with a guy who is everything grand. Any man can be. I'm in love with a strong man. What a hard-working hero is he. Great big arms, muscled heart, dark and shining he folds around me. Picture a lover like this. Lips warm and full that I love the most. Smiling between every kiss. I'm in love with a strong man. Once you see him, you'll have to that any other would just be the wrong man. And it is easy to see why I love life when I'm loving my strong man and letting my strong man love me. And letting my strong man love me. Thank you. hear a love like this. Lips warm and full that I love the most. Smiling between every kiss. I'm in love with a strong man. Once you see him, you have to agree that any other would just be the wrong man. And it is easy to see why I love life when I'm loving my strong man and letting my strong man.
You're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond, speaking to you from the Great White North here in Toronto, Canada. We are paying tribute to Wynton Kelly, who would have been 80 years old on Friday, December the 2nd. He passed away in Toronto, Canada, April of 1971. And on that particular track, he is performing with Abby Lincoln, who took the name Aminata Museka. That was recorded in 1957. And he, like I said in the beginning of this show, was an A-list musician. And some of the people that played on this particular album were Kenny Durham, a great trumpet player. I think Kenny Durham was from Texas, but after I think Dizzy went to Cuba, Kenny Durham went to Cuba and did some work around Cuban music. Kenny Durham, definitely someone that you should check out. Sonny Rollins, whose roots are in the Virgin Islands, he was born in Brooklyn, of course. He's playing tenor saxophone on this particular track. Sonny Rollins is still in the land of the living, and I guess he is one of the greatest, maybe the greatest saxophonist alive today. Wynton Kelly is no longer with us, but he was on piano. Paul Chambers, who is no longer with us, he was on bass, great bass player. He went on to play with Miles Davis with Wynton. The drummer was Max Roach, and normally the drummer that Wynton Kelly is associated with is Jimmy Cobb, but Jimmy Cobb is still in the land of the living, but this was Max Roach's production, because at this particular time, Max was, I guess, getting ready to marry Abby Lincoln. And The Strong Man was written for Abby by Oscar Brown Jr., and we have paid tribute to Wynton Kelly, and anytime you hear the name Wynton Marcellus, remember that he is named after Wynton Kelly, and Nat Adderley, the brother of Cannonball Adderley. I interviewed him or met him many years ago, and he told me in this was in the late 70s or early 80s, he says, watch out, there's another Wynton. He's from New Orleans, and he's probably going to turn the jazz world around. And he started playing with Art Blakey. And I guess they say the rest is history, because Wynton Marcellus is maybe one of the most popular people in the jazz world now. He and his brother Branford, and there's another brother that plays drums, and I'm having one of those moments. I can't remember Delfino Marcellus. That may be his name. If I'm not, please forgive me, for I know not what I'm saying. And that is
going to bring the curtain down on diasporic music for this week. And I may or may not do a show next week, but I'll definitely be back in 2 weeks. I'm leaning more towards doing a show next week. But I would like to thank Sandy Thompson for holding down the buttons today. And I would like to thank everyone for listening. And I would just like to say Tutao Nana, and we will see you in the whirlwind. And we're going to end with Wynton Kelly with Miles Davis playing Freddie Freeloader on the Kind of Blue album. And this is the greatest or the biggest selling jazz album of all time. And Wynton Kelly was a part of that history. So this has been our tribute to Wynton Kelly, born in Brooklyn, New York, and of Trinidadian and Jamaican parents. And we will see you in the whirlwind.